Good morning, everybody, and welcome to ITE 1 and Module 6. Nice to be back. I'll try and say BBBB. It's nice to be back with you all. Okay, thank you, Carrie, for looking after the students so well last week in ITE 5. And just to see if you're all listening to Carrie, as usual, we'll start off with a quick quiz. So if you've got your chat windows open and you'd like to participate in the quiz, and even if you wouldn't like to participate in the quiz, you can put your answers into chat. Okay, do wait till I've finished all the options there. Okay, so question one, which open source operating system is available on multiple hardware platforms? Is it A, Linux, B, Mac OS X, C, Windows 2000, or D, Windows XP? Three answers. Can we have a few more? Yes, thank you. I already heard three, so that's okay. Yeah, okay, then and A was correct. For those that said A, it was Linux. That's the open source operating system. Okay. All right, here's a tricky one for you. You'll have to be listening careful here. Which registry file contains information about the hardware and software in the in the computer system? Is it A, hkey_classes_root, and I'll stop the underscores? Is it B, hkey_current_user? Is it C, hkey_local_machine, or D, hkey_users? And for those that said C, you are correct. It is hkey_local_machine, that's right. Okay. All right. Question three. How can the command line be accessed in Windows XP? Accessed even. Is it A, start run prompt? B, start run command or CMD? C, start control panel prompt? D, start all programs accessories terminal? Well, that was pretty confident, everyone. And you were correct. It is start run CMD. That's correct. Okay, question four. Which file system is recommended for Windows XP for large file support and enhanced security? Is it A, DirectX, B, DOS, C, FAT32, or D, NTFS? Absolutely correct. It is DNTFS. Excellent. Okay. Question five. Even who got that right? What is the purpose of the Microsoft hardware compatibility list? Is it A, it lists all the hardware that runs Microsoft Office software? B, it lists the Microsoft software that runs on the listed hardware? C, it lists hardware that is supported by a Microsoft operating system, or D, it lists hardware that works together. Just CCC, that's correct. It is hardware that is supported by a Microsoft operating system. Well done. Okay, question six. What should be done before upgrading from Windows 2000 to Windows XP? Should you A, backup all the data files, B, update all the device drivers, C, detach all the peripheral devices, or D, get a hammer and hammer the hard drive? Okay, and the correct answer was A, you would backup all your data. Okay, yeah, that's it. Who keeps putting them in after I've given the answer? The person who puts them in after the answer, you are correct. Okay. Question seven. Which key sequence will enable a user to start Windows XP in safe mode? Is it A, Alt plus B, B, Alt plus X, C, Alt plus Z, D, F1, or E, F8? Okay. For those that said E, you are correct, it is F8. Okay, depending where you're coming from, that those type of little mobile ones that we have, that Jenny and Trev have got here. What's the weight of them, Trev?
The weight of the ASUS EEPC 701 was 992 grams. The increase, the newer ASUSs are heavier at 1.3 to 1.6 kilograms, depending on 3 or 6 cell battery.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? You can get these really, really light laptops now, and originally they were like 5-6 kilos in weight, so you had to sort of have a strong shoulders to lug them around. Also, with the PDAs that we've got these days, people are getting PDAs, and they're very tiny, very lightweight, very portable. What about some of the newer phones? I think there's quite a few of the new nice little ones that just do about everything, you know, your diaries and everything. What about our overseas student? You've got these nice little mobile phones that are around these days. Grace, perhaps you in the States? Right, okay. N82, very nice. I haven't seen that one. Yeah, there's a whole range of them. Well, it's not good enough. I'd want one that makes sandwiches too. No, they are great. I've got a Nokia, what have I got, E71?
Yeah, you've got an E71.
Yeah, it's really good. So, yeah, it's great to have these very, very portable devices. The only downside is, you ever put them down, you can't find them. I regularly do that and have to ring my phone to find where I put it. Every day, yeah, exactly. Okay, so yeah, we're talking about all the nice portable devices that we've got today. As I said, the early laptops, they were very heavy. They were also very costly. A lot of the technology's actually come down a lot in price as the technology's actually improved. Same to do with the smartphones there. Although they're starting to get a little bit bigger again, I notice, because they're doing a little bit more. A lot of them have got touch screens as well, which is not so good for us. But they are very, very portable, very useful devices. And as I said, the best benefit for most of us is the compact size. It's very portable. A lot of them have got very good battery power now too. Trevor, yours has got what, 5, 6, 7 hours, something like that?
That is just advertising hype, and you'll find that it's about 3.5, especially when you're running JAWS on it. If anything, always treat your battery recommendations with a little bit of skepticism, because they will try and put the biggest figure they can possibly get away with. And the 5 and 6 hours is actually with the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth off. So it's like, yeah, and who's going to leave those turned off? Well, your mileage may vary, essentially. Yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah, all of them do it all the time. I know with the phones, the other thing is, too, they'll say, you know, so many hours talk time, and I find it, or so many hours just standby, you know, and it's never as good as what they say. Just be wary, but they are very, very useful devices to have. PDAs and phones now, we're putting things like our address books, they've got the calculators, clocks, internet access. By the way, was anybody, when we had our guest in that was on Wednesday, Akin, the professor, did anyone go to the tsunami site? Yeah. Yeah, I signed up for the alerts and got 3 alerts last night. And I slept through them all. I found them this morning. So if I'd have had a tsunami, they'd have been washed away. Yeah, no, but it was a good idea, I thought. So, and for Australians, there's no cost. So good thing to have. Okay, as long as you don't sleep through the warnings. all right, so what about some of the other functions on your phone, for example, or your PDA? Anyone using any interesting types of usages that they want to share with us?
Diary.
Anyone use the camera function? I do. Yeah, I just pick it up and shoot and fire. Yep. Oh, yes, yeah. Until you killed your phone, okay.
I read packets in the freezer.
Oh, okay. And would you like to tell us about that, Jenny?
I have the KNFB reader, and I tend to read instructions and packets out of the freezer. It will do tins, all those things that are a little bit hard to get on a scanner.
Ah, okay. That's one I didn't know about. I'll have to talk to you about that. Excellent. Yeah, so there's loads of functions you can have. Anyone use Bluetooth very much with them? Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. Oh, okay. Very, very handy, especially if you get a new phone and you want to get all your data from one to the other, you can actually Bluetooth that across to the new phone.
Assuming they're the same model. Watch out for that.
Yep. And the other thing I use it for is Bluetoothing photos and stuff that I've taken over to my computer.
And animal sounds.
And, yeah. And ringtones. Sharing ringtones.
I use Bluetooth for my GPS receiver. So my GPS receiver talks to my phone with Bluetooth.
Okay.
I saw something really cool that I just wanted to tell you guys about for the phones. There is somebody who's working on a free open source mobile, very accurate, I guess, OCR converter that will have 11 languages or something, and it's pretty close to release. I just saw it in Top Tech Tidbits, so something that people should look for. I think it'll be really cool.
Would you like to send the URL to us, Grace?
I'm subscribed to Top 10. I can
send it. Oh, okay, cool. Okay. All good. It sounds great. Thank you.
What I'll be interested to see will be the actual quality of the OCR that comes out of this thing. They claim it's very accurate. I've yet to see a decent open source OCR, fine engine, and but measured with what and under what lighting conditions, that's what we need to wait and see, because it's not the OCR engine itself that's the problem, it's the quality of the cameras on the phone. And if you're lucky enough to have an N82 with a Xenon flash, yes, you are going to see 98% results, but if you're one of us poor schmucks that doesn't have the Xenon flash, the photos just aren't going to have that size, that sort of clarity, and it's really going to depend on what comes into the engine as to what actual results we're going to get out, because I've seen some pretty bad camera phones, so it'll be interesting to see how it performs from the top-end phones down to the bottom. Yeah,
3 megapixels.
It's not the megapixels that's important. It's actually the contrast ratios. It's important that, for example, my mum's got a 6120 Classic, and it's got a Carl Zeiss lens in it, so it takes exceedingly clear and very high contrast photos. It'd work really well with that, but with some of the lower end phones, the actual sensors just aren't up to the task of getting you, like if you took a picture of something with the camera, a human wouldn't even be able to read it, let alone a computer. So it'll be interesting to see how it scales and how it behaves on across the different range of phones.
Well, yeah, definitely. If it's accessible and it does what it says it will, it'll blow KNFB right out of the water, and people have wasted their money.
Well, a lot of people paid $2,000 for the KNFB reader when it first came out, and then the price plummeted, so they were quite unhappy.
And what's it retail at now, Perry? Do you know?
I'm not sure, but I know there was a significant price drop, and they said, oh, well, we've given you a price drop, so we'll give all the people who paid the higher price some extra languages for free. And then everybody's like, well, yeah, we don't want extra languages. We'd like half of our money back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. They dropped it by $1,000, I think. Yeah, because I think it was originally $2,000 or $1,500 or something. It was more expensive than what it is now, put it that way. Yep, that'd be about right. So, yeah, you save $600 and you get some extra free languages that you may or may not use, and you don't get your money back. So, no, not too cool.
No, not at all. Okay, well, when we're talking about laptops and comparing them with desktops, horses with courses, the similarities they have, though, is they've got the same types of ports so that your peripherals between them can be interchangeable. And depending on the laptop you get will depend. Some have got two, like, for example, USB ports. Some have got, you know, four or five, if you're lucky. And, you know, two or three is probably average, but the depending on the size of your laptop as well. In the laptop, generally, your connections and your drives are located either on the front, they can be on the side. It just depends on the model you've got. You've got PC cards, express slots. You can obviously you've got memory and modems and all that type of thing. Your network connections. You've also got wireless in most of them. You've also got to have a port for your external power, and you can run your laptop on either AC power. So in that scenario, you'd be using an AC adapter, and or you can use your battery. And we were talking a little bit about the different types of batteries that are available. Obviously, the ones with longer life in the battery, they tend to make your laptop a little bit heavier. Sometimes they make them a little bit bulkier as well. So you've got to be sort of prepared for that extra little bit of weight and perhaps a little bit of extra bulk by using the larger batteries. The battery life's going to vary considerably. I think mine's only got about an hour and a half, and mine's a fairly new computer.
I was just going to point out, not knocking you specifically, but yours is a satellite, and satellites are not known for their battery life. If you'd bought a Tekra, you would probably have about two or three times the battery life you've got. So we're not sort of laughing and pointing and go, ha ha, you got a pink satellite.
but it's pink.
Yeah, Geraldine's got a pink laptop. Yeah, it's only so Ray won't pinch it, that's right.
You could guarantee that.
But yeah, you'll find that if you buy the satellite sort of Toshibas or whatever in the low end, see, a lot of people see a $500 or $600 laptop in the department store and they go, oh, I can afford that. Oh, and they go out with their little $500, $600. And then when they get it home and they find it's a crock, they find that the battery life is like an hour and the screen's not particularly good and the DVD sounds like a, you know, somebody reversing their car into a brick wall, and they sort of think, well, maybe I should have paid that extra $300 for a real laptop. Yeah, I bet your Walmart does. The funny thing is, if you get something with an Atom in it, like an Intel Atom, they're really good. For $400, I just got a, well, it's not a laptop, but I couldn't get netbooks for that with as well, but I got an EE box, which is basically this little plastic box with the...
Oh, you bought one of those?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw them. Yeah, I got one, yep.
I thought you might.
Well, I'm running my voice over IP PABX on it when I get around to setting it up this weekend. And it's really quiet and runs quite cool. But yeah, the green PCs and stuff you can get at Walmart and stuff are quite good, but you do have to watch the cheap low-end laptops as far as battery life, quality of components, and durability.
The other thing too is like any computer, look after your laptop. Don't go dropping it, don't go sort of spilling things into it, and keep your air vents clear, you know, so that it can run nice and cool. Hopefully you'll have it for a long life. Look at the different form factors around. You know, you've got some that are obviously sturdier than others. Look at your keys, your keyboard, you know, all those sort of factors that give you, what it's made out of. Is it durable? Sometimes you buy cheap, you get cheap too. Like Kerry said, you know, you get cheap materials that are used in the making of the laptop. Okay, some of the newer ones, you've got all sorts of little gadgets and gadgets, and including things like fingerprint readers. Anyone got one with that? Yeah, they're good.
Of course,
eh?
It's not working with Windows Internet Explorer 8 yet, which I just downloaded today. I wish they would have let me know that.
Okay. Now, interesting case in point here, guys, and people might not be aware of this. MythBusters did a debunking on fingerprint sensors. They're not secure. In fact, you can fool it with a mold of your finger, you can fool it with a silicon thing of your finger, they fooled it with a photocopy of your fingerprint.
That's good.
Yeah, so don't expect decent security out of a fingerprint sensor. It really is a false sense of security in your consumer-grade laptops.
Oh, I'm not expecting security. It just remembers my passwords for me, for my sites that really don't need to be secure.
I would strongly recommend also having something like KeePass, because... it's also a little bit, at least you know where the backups and stuff are stored. I'm a bit wary of trusting a third-party piece of software to hang on to all my passwords for us. At least with something like keypass.info, it's open source. But often good to have both. Yeah, that's probably a good idea as well.
Mm. Okay, your monitor, obviously, in laptops, built into the laptop, so you've got like a clamshell effect. We've all seen laptops, I know, and... it's got your resolution, brightness and contrast settings, so you can adjust all of those things. It can't, however, be adjusted for height and distance, obviously because you've got it integrated into the lid of the case. You can also set them up with laptop settings, so that particularly for us JAWS users, that's very handy functionality to have. And you can adjust all your power settings on your laptops as well. Okay, let me just scroll down here and see what else we need to talk about on laptops. Okay, as I mentioned, keeping the exhaust vents clear, free of dust. And anyone tied around with those laptop locks? Have they tried them?
I have the electronic ones or the Kensington ones.
Either one, Kerry. Do you want to talk about either?
The Kensington locks are that little hole that's in the side of your laptop, and you stick this little thing in it that's sort of square, and you turn the key, and then the little end of the square turns to 90 degrees of where it regularly is, and it locks into the side of the laptop. And there are two types. One you can lock with a key lock, which blind people can use, and one that you can lock with a combination lock, which is an absolute pain in the backside for blind people to use. And it will, you put it around something, although in these training rooms about the only thing you can put it around is your chair, because there's nothing on the desk to secure it to. And it stops people from walking away with your laptop. So, or your EPC or your EE box or whatever. But yeah, you've got to make sure you've got something to actually attach the cable to. And then there are various electronic locks that you can put in your computer with software that if it doesn't see it in your USB port, it won't let anybody use the computer. But then, of course, if the lock that it's looking for in the USB port fails, you're in somewhat of an amount of trouble.
Like everything else, they, you know, aren't infallible. So, a bit of sort of caution there, I guess, too, you know, particularly if you've got it just around a chair. Someone will take the chair and the laptop. It's a little bit harder for them to get out, obviously, when, you know, of a building or wherever. So anything that slows people down is a good thing. Okay, most of the functionality that you have in a desktop computer you can also do in your laptop, but the parts are not interchangeable. You'll find that with the desktop components, they tend to be standardised size, form factor, and with regard to laptop components, they're much more specialised, so there's differences in size and, you know, where they particularly say, like, you know, if you're looking at your hard drives, a lot tinier, obviously, because of the size it's got to go into in the laptop. Any questions up until now? Okay, we'll progress on then.
Is any of our Indians still on?
I think so. I don't know.
There's Kitchu. Rohit and Sadish, but he didn't move himself, so I don't know whether he's actually there or just lurking. Sriginth is probably there. Sabod should be there. And Saprita is usually there. But, yeah, maybe they all haven't had enough coffee this morning.
I'm here.
Hello,
Katie.
To India. Oh, good, excellent. Ah, good. Okay. Now, with regard to your system board, excellent. Your system board or your motherboard, the desktop's got a standard form factor, and allows the system boards from different manufacturers to be interchangeable. The laptop system boards, they vary from each manufacturer and they're proprietary. So, it would be wise if you are exchanging system boards to get another one the same from the same manufacturer, so it's going to fit your particular laptop. Obviously, with regard to your CPU, as we know, what does the CPU do, guys? Anyone want to tell me?
The computer's brain.
It is the computer's brain, that's right. So, okay, they're designed to use less power in a laptop and create less heat than, for example, your desktop processor. That's correct, yes. And as a result of that, the laptop processors don't actually require cooling devices. So they're usually quieter too. So, you hope they are. A little point of caution there, you'll find that certain laptops do build up heat. Others are much better and much cooler, so that's another thing you want to look at when you're purchasing a laptop. Let it run for a while, or make sure you've had one in the shop running for a while, see if it's how warm it gets.
There was actually some concern, actually, that a few years back when they were running quite warm, that blokes who were using laptops on their laps could actually negatively affect their sterility by the heat of the laptop.
Interesting. Moving right along. Okay. All right. Now, with regard to your power management in laptops, sort of power management controls, when we're talking about, they're talking about the flow of electricity that's going to the components of the computer. So if you've got a desktop, it's usually in the one or set up in one location, and it's usually plugged in the power source. And the desktop power management allows the electricity to go from the source to the components of the desktop computer. There's also a small battery in the desktop, and that gives electricity and it keeps the clock and the BIOS settings, you know, all there when the desktop is powered off. So your laptops are small, they're portable, and it's achieved. Sorry, my mobile phone's going off. I forgot to turn it off. I'll just turn that off. You can hear dogs barking, that's my phone.
The whole world can hear it too.
And I'll put that on silent as we speak. so they're small, they're portable, and they're small and portable because their size and weight is kept slow by the types of functionality that's in that particular type of form factor. When your laptop's plugged in, the power management sends the electricity from the AC power source to your laptop components. And it also, that AC power source recharges your battery. When your laptop's unplugged, the laptop power management takes the electricity from the battery and sends it to the laptop components. Two methods of power management. One is the advanced power management, or APM. Hard to put your phone on and read your notes at the same time, but we have managed it. I'm a girl, I can do more than one thing at once. I can hear all the guys saying boo. And also the Advanced Configuration and Power Interface, or ACPI. So APM, Advanced Power Management, is just an earlier version of power management. With regard to that, it was the BIOS was used to control the settings for your power management. And then along came ACPI, and that's replaced API, and it gives you better power management features. And with regard to that, it's controlled by the operating system. It controls the power management. Okay, just scrolling down. Okay, expansion devices are attached to laptops and desktops differently. With desktops, you're mostly using serial parallel USB. Some of them got FireWire ports. The laptop attaches those with the same ports and also PC cards. And also mostly you're seeing using USB FireWire ports on laptops as well. So you can get a lot of the external peripherals with your laptops. You can use things like docking stations as well, port replicators, all sorts of things that are very similar to what you're using. You can also connect up, obviously, external devices like, well, for example, I've got a Braille display sitting here, and that's plugged in at the moment via USB. You can put an external keyboard with your laptop. You can connect it to an external hard drive to back up your data, which we all do, don't we, on a regular basis. And you know, things like scanners and that. So they're similar in their expansion capabilities, but the difference is the form factor. Okay. Any questions while I'm scrolling?
What is a docking station?
Over to Kerry. I can't explain those.
Okay.
I know what they are.
A docking station is a device that allows you to, as it says, it docks your laptop. And that is to say that you connect your monitor and your keyboard and your USB devices and your printer and the dog into the docking station. And then you slide the laptop in. And the laptop goes, found new hardware, crash, burn. And then you've got all of the home devices that you can then connect to, and then you rip the thing out of the docking station and take it away. And it's a good way of having it so that you connect it into external keyboards, external mice, speakers, all that sort of crud through the docking station to save you from unhooking and rehooking everything up to the laptop each time.
They're quite good. Okay. Also, laptops use the PC card slot, and that adds to their the functions that they can do. Uses a open standard interface and allows you to connect peripheral devices using the card bus standard. You can connect memory cards, modems, hard drives, and your network cards using that standard. With regard to PC cards, they follow the PCMCIA standard, and they've got a number of types, types 1 to 3, I believe. And each of them is different in its size and also its functionality and what type of devices you can actually use with it. A newer type of card is the PC Express card. A lot of people will have seen those. It's got a 34-pin and 54-pin configuration. And you can also get the wireless network interface cards for your laptop as well. Okay, scrolling.
While Geraldine's scrolling, has anybody pre-read this chapter and actually got any questions on this? Because a lot of these chapters you just probably should read and digest rather than having it jammed in your eardrums. So has anybody pre-read the chapter and got any questions while Geraldine finds the next bit she wants to go through?
Yeah, there's a lot of it. It's just scrolling past here.
And no, where can I get a free laptop is not a valid question.
Yes, a lot of this we already know in regard to laptops and... but it's still, you've got to pass an exam, so we have to go through it. Okay, I'm down to power schemes. I'll throw that over to Kerry.
I can have a drink. What are you throwing it over to me?
Oh, we're just talking about how to change the power settings and that type of thing.
Okay. You can change.
So to get to hibernate, sleep, and all that. I'm just going to drink.
Yep. You can go into Start, Settings, Control Panel, or Start Control Panel if you've got that stupid XP menu thing turned on, or you can go Start and key in the word Control, and then Microsoft will go, oh, you want the Control Panel, bang, thump, and that'll get you in Vista. And then you go to Power Options, which is called something completely different under Vista, just because they don't want to call it Power anymore, and you can actually set the time to standby, shut down, hibernate, etc. Or you can install Speed Switch XP and set the power management through that. Although if you're going to install software to set the power settings yourself, you'd want to uninstall whatever crud the manufacturer has installed. And some of the utilities that the manufacturer installs on your laptop are very inaccessible. For example, the Toshiba power management is cruddy and inaccessible, so it's better to take it off and put the Windows stuff on. You might not get quite as much battery power, but you'll at least be able to get at all the settings. So hibernation, be aware that when you set up hibernation on your laptop, which is the one where you put it to sleep and it saves its contents to disk, and then it reads itself back in from disks about one in every three times, and then the other two times it crashes horribly, it actually uses up as much disk space as your installed memory. So if you have 2 gig of RAM, you need 2 gig of free disk space on the C drive for hiberfile.sys. So if you're low on space on the C drive, turn off your hibernation and get yourself a couple of gigs back.
Okie dokie. Thank you, Terry. All right, now I've just scrolled past a whole lot of stuff there because so I'll refer you to your notes if you want to know any more about laptops, because we're going to go on to mobile phones now. Or cell phones if you happen to be in the US. Is that correct, Grace? Okay. Anyone want to tell me? I'm not going to go into a lot about cell phones mobile phones, as we call them here. Thank you, Jenny. but I thought we might just throw open to a few different opinions or different functions that people use their phones for. I know we talked briefly about them before. Anyone got anything they'd like to share with us as far as what they do with their phone? And be polite. Tips on usage?
I was going to upgrade people. The other day we said that there was no screen reader for BlackBerry. There is another screen reader for BlackBerry now called Arator, I think it's called. I have no idea how expensive it is going to be, but it's been sold by Humanware, so I expect the price to be quite unreasonable. And it'll be coming out soon, and that will give you access to the BlackBerry, if that's something you really want. Personally, the BlackBerry lets you connect into your work-based email and have your email wherever you go. Personally, I would rather put the device under my foot and stamp on it, and actually get away from my email for some time. I do not want to be always contactable, but obviously different people have different needs.
Courses for courses.
That's right. So that will be coming out soon. There's also the Symbian screen readers, and there's also Mobile Speak Pocket for the PDA and Windows smartphone devices. And HAL has a screen reader as well. It's quite a lot of accessibility for us, and you can get access to the calendar, the email. There's a golf game you can buy for $17 US. You can get access to Pocket Word, Pocket Excel, all that sort of stuff. I tend to find that the Pocket PCs are too small to type on at any great speed, and I tend to find the same with the phone. The actual tininess of the device reduces the usability of it. I would be tempted to get a netbook and some internet access if you were going to do serious work on it and just use the mobile for things like adding the odd appointment here and there and that sort of thing, or reading the odd tin or bottle or thing in your freezer.
Well, that's what I use mine for mostly, is for my diary. I don't really take notes on my laptop, on my mobile phone, I should say. Grace, I heard your answer, you love knowing who's calling you. I like that functionality too. Yeah, no, that's very handy. Just nice to be able to pick up the phone and say hello, you know, Harry or Phil or whatever your name is. Because you've heard it when you're getting a call. Yeah, and you can also, as Jenny just said, you can also not answer it if you don't want to talk to them. Okay.
Oh, the other thing you can do is you can sort of answer the phone and go, hello, how you do? Sorry, I seem to have in trouble with some of the sick. Look, I'll call you back.
So next time, if you're ringing Kerry and you think his signal is scrambled, it may not be. Anyone remember those early bricks that came out? Or you all
I remember the bag phones, the ones that were actually in a bag in about 1988, and they were huge. They were about the size of a backpack. Yeah. They were gigantic, and it was, they'd open this bag up and answer it, and they thought they were so cool, and we thought they were such a loser.
Yeah. And you had to pull out the aerial every time you picked up the phone, you know, like sort of picked up it with one hand and then pulled up the aerial so you get a reception.
We all know why they were called the bricks.
Oh.
Actually, yep.
They had good sound, though. You know, like, you usually got good signal with them.
Well, one of the advantages with the analog mobile phone network was that you weren't actually trying to multiplex a whole stack of calls over limited bandwidth. And one of the things that makes GSM mobile sound pretty crummy is the compression they use, which is about 1,800 bytes per second. And the codec was sort of developed in about 1991. So whilst we can get away with 1.8K a second on Ventrilo, we've got far newer codecs that tend to sound a lot better. The CDMA, which stands for, CDMA, Carrier Division Multiple Access. Yes,
we actually
think it stands for Consumers Don't Matter Anyway, because it doesn't work particularly well in Australia, and there are significant problems with it, but the sound on it is rather bizarre, and even on the 3G networks it sounds better than the GSM, but it's amazing what people will put up with as far as sound quality on your regular mobile phones, and especially on VoIP systems. If you've been on any sort of VoIP, and yes, Skype phones count, Skype tends to maintain its quality fairly well, but once the quality degrades on VoIP and stuff, you can end up with some very broken call quality. And nothing against anybody who's currently logged on to channel, but there's nothing I hate more than to be switched through to a call centre in India that's running on some under-provisioned voice over IP circuit. So not only can you not understand the poor Indian that's trying to do their job at the other end of the phone, but they can't understand you. So it'll be interesting to see how VoIP and these sorts of things go in the next few years, and whether people start putting their foot down about call quality and saying, enough is enough, fix our call quality.
That's for sure.
Well, the funny thing was, I rang up Linksys, just to finish the story. Linksys is now a division of Cisco Systems, just thought I'd mention that.
Brought to you by Cisco.
And the call quality was absolutely abysmal. And there was this nice woman in the Philippines that was trying to fill in this fault report before she gave me the RMA, and she's like, "Hey, very sorry, I cannot understand you." I'm like, this is not a good ad for your voice over IP devices. Why would I buy one of these things if this is the sort of quality I'm going to expect when I call up your main call centre? I don't know if that's occurred to them yet.
Okay, yes. Anyone got Skype?
Yeah, try being a blind person. That happens from about age one. Let's move on.
Oh, dear. Okay, so, I use another function I use on my phone is actually Skype, which is very handy. Saves me a lot of money on calls because I can make them free on my phone as well. So anyone else using Skype on their phone? Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, we actually have somebody who doesn't live too far from Geraldine, no names mentioned, that thought he could save an absolute bundle on his phone bill by using Skype and Skype Out. And when it works, it's really good, and
yes, I agree.
When it doesn't, you just call them back later because it's not worth. But it's really good because I can go, oh, I'm sorry, I can't understand you. Call me back later, and I hang the phone up. So it's kind of handy in that respect.
So what program do you guys like to use?
I don't, actually. I don't like to use any of them, but then again, I'm a bit of an introvert. Skype is good. It's just that Skype is proprietary, and you need a Wintel box to run it. You need to be running Windows and Intel, or you've got to run the compiled binaries for Linux, which are completely inaccessible to the vision impaired. So it's a very closed system, and you can't actually integrate anything into it. If you're using systems such as SIP, and your VoIP sort of system, SIP and RTP, you have a lot more options such as Linphone and all of that sort of stuff. As far as mobile phones are concerned, Fring isn't too bad once you get it working, and there are certain versions of Fring that have fairly good accessibility with Talks. But the fact is that the internet was never designed to be able to handle this traffic, and because of the lack of quality of service, your calls are going to break up no matter what you use. So it's not that one program is better than the other per se, it's just that the underlying infrastructure is completely munted.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah, I use MSN on my phone too. Not all the time. When I think to get on it. but yeah, it's another functionality that's good. Also, as a browser on the phone, I use Opera Mini. That's a freely available browser as well, which is quite good. So yeah, lots of functionality there.
Just make sure, and obviously Opera Mini does work, but just make sure that the browser you're going to install onto your mobile phone is compatible with the screen reader you're using, or you could be in for quite a nasty time of it.
That's right.
Well, if you just use the one that comes with the N series, you're usually pretty good.
Yeah, generally that is fairly well supported, although if you can find a third-party one that does work with your screen reader, you'll often get faster page rendering and more
it
JavaScript and stuff like that. So, yeah. I have found that the N70 I've got, which is a fairly old phone, is a bit underpowered, and the web browsing on that is no fun whatsoever.
Yeah, so I'd give Opera Mini a plug there. It's pretty good. So, yeah. Okay. Well, I think really what we covered today, although it seems, like we've covered a lot, but we've sort of talked fairly basically about a lot of it, I would refer you back to your notes on much of it, because there is a lot of information in the notes. A lot of it's very basic. A lot of it makes sense about cleaning your laptop, that type of thing, and rather than going over and over that infinitum, I'll refer you back to your notes for that. But how about I throw you another quick quiz, and I've got you the wrong quiz, so let me just go and get the other one. Module 6. Kerry can sing while I'm doing this.
By that look in your eye, I can see you're gonna all over me.
Okay, shut up now. I got the quiz now. He'll pay me back later for that.
Just saying, if you're all awake.
He hasn't got a bad voice, hey? Yeah, no, he's incorrigible, that's for sure. Okay, here we have the quiz. Question 1. Which two features, that's two, make laptops a good alternative to desktop computers? Is it A, their compact design, B, lower cost, C, enhanced capabilities, or D, portability? Pick two. Look at them go, that's great. Compact design and they're portable. A and D, yep, that's correct. Okay, a couple of things I didn't go into here, so let's see who knows. Which laptop device is commonly hot swappable? Is it A, the display, B, the internal hard drive, C, the PC card, or D, RAM? Excellent. Yes, it is the PC card. Which type of memory? Here's another one that's in your notes that I didn't talk about. It's used in laptops. Is it A, DIMM, B, RIM, C, SIM, or D, SODIMM, or SODIMM? I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed. Well done, SODIMM. That's correct. Which power management control was introduced prior to the advanced configuration and power interface? Was it a CCI, B, ACPI, D, AMD, or D, APM? Well done. Yes, it was APM. Okie dokie, what do FireWire and USB devices have in common? Is it A, only one of these devices can be used at a time? B, they are considered hot swappable devices? C, they cannot be used with desktop PCs? Or D, they are parallel communications devices? Whoever said A, you're wrong.
That was Jenny.
Okay, Jenny, you're wrong. B, they're considered hot swappable. So everyone was right but you, Jenny. She'll pay me back later. At least you answered. Yeah, that's right. If you don't know, guess, that's the way to go. And you learn that way. Okay, next question. What should a user do when operations on a USB memory device have been completed and it is necessary to remove it from the laptop computer? Aha, here we go.
E is rip it out and run away from the computer as fast as you can.
Oh no, Jenny.
The question was, what should a user do when operations on a USB memory device are completed on a laptop?
Okay, is it A, reboot the computer, B, choose start, control panel, system, select the USB device, then the properties tab, have a cup of coffee, click and remove. C, click the safely remove hardware icon in the Windows system tray. Or D, what Kerry said, just remove the USB device from the computer.
Or E, click on the safely remove icon in the system tray, then pound your fist through the screen when Windows claims that something is still accessing the device, even though you know you've closed everything down.
That's when you take Kerry's first option and rip the card out and run. Good morning, all.
Good morning, Elise.
Actually, to be fair, I have actually seen, and I know it's never happened to Gary yet, but it will. If you actually rip them out without it saving everything, I actually have seen thumb drives that have had their file allocation table completely scrambled by doing that, and you never get another thing back off them. So do it at your peril. You might get away with it, but it'll be the day when you really need to that things will go
exactly
Terribly wrong.
Yes, I think one of our students from last year did that. Name's not mentioned.
No idea who you're talking about, Elise. That will be C is the correct answer.
I think I'll just go out and hang my washing out. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Oh, I didn't dear. Say who it was.
No, you didn't. No, everybody knew that. Okay, yes, and correct. C was correct.
You didn't need to.
Hello, India, aren't we mad here? There's pandemonium
yeah,
here.
We are.
Okay. We like to have a little bit of fun as well. Okay, question 7. Which two steps are recommended when cleaning a laptop screen? Okay, so we want to A, clean the display screen using tissue moistened with water. B, disconnect all devices attached to the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen. C, clean the screen with hydrochloric acid.
I think you actually mean hydrochloric, don't you?
Hydrochloric acid, yes. Or D, power off the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen.
Don't we want BD?
Yeah, you want BD, folks. So you're going to disconnect all devices attached to the laptop prior to cleaning it, and you're going to power off the laptop.
I'd like to know why you've got to disconnect all devices between cleaning the screen. That's just naff. I mean, these guys go a bit over the top when it comes to safety. What's wrong with sort of tearing up to the side of your laptop, ducking in from the side and wiping up and down with a bit of Windex and then getting on with your life? But, yep, if you see it in the test, people, BD.
BD, that's right.
I think the thought is that you might actually be really clumsy and splosh liquid all over things, and if you've got other devices connected, you could short out USBs and stuff. Although one of the things I've noticed, and I'd just like to caution people against these just while I'm talking about USB devices that really shouldn't exist. I don't know if anybody's seen them, but if you go to those shops that often sell an incredible quantity of material at extremely cheap prices, good deal for you, and they've got a USB plasma ball. Am I the only one that thinks having 5 to 10,000 volts coming out of a USB plasma ball near your sensitive electronic equipment is a bad idea? There are just some things that shouldn't go into a USB port.
No, that sounds like a pretty awful idea.
Yeah. So although the plasma ball looks good, you quite you're basically putting a source of electrostatic discharge as close to the computer as possible, and we all learnt in module 2 that that's a bad idea. Uncook all devices and make sure the laptop is turned off before you clean the screen. So that's all good, and that's what they want to see. So that's what you put if it comes up in the test.
Okay, and question 8. What is the easiest, least expensive way to extend the life of a laptop and keep it in optimal working order? Are you going to A, replace the parts regularly, B, clean it regularly, C, reinstall your operating system every week, or D, back up your important information at least monthly? And the answer was B. So you're going to clean it regularly. Okay, we will be talking later on in the course. I'm not sure whether we do cut out a couple of modules usually because ITE1 goes on and on and on and on. And sometimes we run out of time and we cut out a couple of modules. But at this stage, we will be doing laptop troubleshooting later on. I think it's about module 15 or 16 as well. Next week, we're going to be talking about printers and scanners, and I'm just going to hand over for any questions or anything you'd like to ask, discuss, whatever, because we have finished rather early.
Does anybody have any questions?
Is everybody awake?
I'm awake.
Excellent.
I am too.
You are too. Good. You think you're awake. I think I'm awake too, but only just.
No questions?
Actually, speaking of safety, which is totally unrelated to what we're talking about here, but just shows you how careful you've got to be. I got an electric shock the other day, and it was my own fault as I was unplugging my laptop. I was unplugging it from a power board, and as I did, I was doing it one-handed while talking on the phone, so I'm a naughty girl, and as I did, my fingers touched the metal prongs as it pulled out. Yes, tusks, tusk, yes. So do be careful, and safety is an all-important factor. So I got a charge out of life. Ha ha, boom, boom.
and interestingly enough, there are some plugs that are actually quite dangerous in that respect because they will actually make contact with the pins in the PowerPoint and contact with your fingers. So what I would recommend that you do in that particular instance is Obviously, Geraldine will do this in future, is don't have your fingers anywhere near the pins and actually hold on to the plastic part of the plug, and don't let your fingers trail around like a trailing around fingers. I've been bitten by things in the past as well. The other thing that used to be easy to be bitten by is in the old AT cases, they used to have dual pole single throw switches, which had four pins sticking upwards, and if you actually managed to get your fingers on the back and the front pins, well, in Australia you would get hit by 240 volts, and let's just say that when it used to happen, my language was far from stellar. very unpleasant. Yes, it was like, oh, bother, Asian.
Oh, my goodness, that smarted. Yes. Yes.
Absolutely.
Smarted. Yes. No, it is, it just shows you how easy, though, it is to be, like we might sort of joke around, but it is very important to be safe around electricity. And also stay focused. Don't try and do three things at once like I was trying to do. So we're all probably a bit guilty of that at times. This shows you how accidents happen. All right. Any other questions, comments?
Any other questions or comments on either of the courses before we all go off for an early break? Oh, I do have to mention, actually, we've got to get some of the Indians, and probably, actually, the reason we've got to get some of the Indians is because, who are they? One of our companies is paying $25,000 over 3 years or something, isn't it? Yeah. So we need you guys to write up some things about how you're enjoying the course.
Yes.
So if you could start sort of drafting that up and saying, you know, what you like about the course and whether you like it or not, let me just give you some incentive by saying if you don't, you won't get any more funding and we're going to shut the course down, okay? So we'd really like a couple of those. In all seriousness, people won't donate money unless they think you guys are enjoying it. So if you guys could just write a little blurb of a couple of paragraphs, maybe 3 or 4 paragraphs, email them to caviinstructors@gots.net. Tell us, are you finding the courses interesting and exciting and engaging? Are you enjoying the opportunity you've been given? And are you very happy or not that these courses are being run? And unfortunately, we have to do this because it's the only thing that these companies are getting back out of giving us lots of money, so it's probably the least we can do. So please sit down and write those up in the next couple of weeks. And yeah, if you can write something up as well, Grace, let us know whether you're enjoying the course or not. Just a few paragraphs will do. We don't need war and peace, but just whether this course is giving you a an interesting look into IT and whether you're enjoying it. So stuff like that. And we'll probably need sort of a progress thing about every 3 months, just so that people can see how they're going and that sort of thing. We're also, and I'm going to mention this, if all goes well, we're going to be working on sponsor a student. So what's going to happen is a company might say put $5,000 down to sponsor a student, which will be a way of getting them to fund the course. If we ask people for $150,000, they're probably not going to give it to us, but maybe they'll sponsor a student. So, and obviously we're not going to come out with an advertising campaign that sort of goes, help these students, they've obviously been hit by the stupid stick, but for $5,000 you can sponsor a student to become incredibly clever. Sponsor your student today. You don't actually see any of the money, and you don't actually get chocolate bars or anything, but we'll find some way of rewarding you with like a free pegboard or something. So yeah, we are looking at doing the whole sponsor a student thing. So
do they get to name the student?
Well, we don't know. We haven't worked out whether the idea is going to fly yet. We're pretty sure nobody will sponsor Jenny. No, just kidding. But it's just ideas how to get money out of people in this tough economic climate, because we've discovered that being nice to people isn't profitable, but we'd still like to be nice to you, so we're looking on different ways of actually getting money and stuff. So if you guys can help out with that, that'd be really good, like just saying how wonderful the course is and all that sort of stuff. And we'll also be showing those sorts of things to the boards of these companies and showing them that we're doing a good job.
And the $25,000 we're talking about for our Indian students is going directly to sponsoring our Indian students. So, yes, so if you could do that as soon as you can, that would be, we would be very grateful for that.
Yeah, and if anybody else has any ideas on how we can get money, get back to us privately. Yeah, if anybody has any ideas on how to do fundraising or how you're going to get money to do these courses, let us know. I mean, obviously, But we're all here for at least another 6 to 12 months, so don't think that we're going to sort of disappear, fly by night before you get your certificates. We'll probably just fly by night when you all submit your labs at the last minute. But, yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, and if you know anybody in your home countries, you know, that you think might be approachable, then, let us know, talk to them.
No worries, that's excellent to hear.
Okay, everyone, we'll leave it there.
It's actually not the sound card, Elise. It's the microphone, and you show me a good headset that has a decent microphone with a reasonable amount of top end, and we'll go and get 10 of them, because all of the microphones we've got have got sort of a high pass cut off at about 10 or 11 kilohertz. The sound card is working properly, but it's just, yeah.
Yeah, the only way I think you can do it is a separate headphone set like I've got. I'll let you know about this Philips Bluetooth headset when it comes that I got off Catch yesterday. I don't know whether it's any good or not.
Oh, they're horrible.
Are they?
Yeah, because they're completely inaccessible, and the only way you can see what mode they're in is by jamming the LEDs up to your eyeball, which is obviously very difficult when you're wearing it, to actually see whether you've got it paired and what mode and stuff it's in. I've already got a set of the 7100s, and I was about to chuck them in the bin.
Okay, thanks for letting me know. No, I might chuck mine in the bin after you. Is the audio quality any good?
The audio quality's fine, but you've got to have a device that supports A2DP or whatever it's called to actually get the stereo and all that sort of stuff. Also, be aware that a Bluetooth connection at A2DP or whatever it's called is less reliable than one at the lower bit rates. So it will function, but you've also got to have the right Bluetooth stack installed to be able to handle that. I think the one on the EEP is okay, and if you've got something like Blue Solil or the Toshiba stack, it'll be okay, but the Microsoft stack is not going to cut it for Bluetooth audio, I can tell you now.
Yeah, well, it's one of the reasons I bought it is because I wanted to use it with the Triple E PC, and as far as I'm aware, that stack is alright on that machine, but we'll see what happens. It's one of those spur-of-the-moment sort of things to buy. I'll go back to minding my own business now.
No, that's fine.
Nice to have you on.
Yeah, no, it is okay. If you can sort the lights out, you probably will have some joy with it. They are a reasonable set of headphones. I'm not sure how good the microphone is, and it is a fair amount away from your mouth. So we'll see how we go. But yeah, we'll be interested to see how you sound and stuff.
I'll come up on Ventrilo with it on the EEP when it comes on something like you hear.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing too is if you're launching JAWS as a service, which most people are, you will not be able to use the Bluetooth headphones as an audio output device unless you unload and reload JAWS, because the Bluetooth stack will not be initialized until after you log in.
Actually, I don't, so I should be right.
No, just making sure you knew about that one, because that one can bite
people. It's worth knowing, actually. Yes, I can see the potential trap there. Yep, thanks for letting us know. And I guess that would apply to anyone else thinking of buying Bluetooth headsets for their respective mobile portable computers.
Look, some of the headsets aren't too bad. You've got to be careful with the cheaper ones, like certain students. Well, yes and no, Grace. If JAWS launches before the Bluetooth is initialized, you will still have that problem. It doesn't matter that you've been able to override the sound card JAWS uses since version 3.3. The only difference is they've put it in the interface now.
I was just thinking that Bluetooth was its own sound card, and being that, maybe you can get it to work right?
But unfortunately some of the Bluetooth stacks don't initialize themselves with the pairing codes until after you've logged in.
Okay, I see. It's not like a USB one where it just you plug it in and it switches over.
No. Well, it can be, but I'm just saying it isn't. For example, if something happens to disrupt the Bluetooth connection or the sound card goes west, it then claims it doesn't have the pairing and it won't let audio travel through. So it's something to be aware of, that it can actually be a bit flaky if you are trying to shovel through Bluetooth headphones. We did have a student last year who was quite successfully using a Bluetooth earpiece. But one of the things you've got to be careful with the Bluetooth earpieces is if they don't support the high fidelity, they do sound pretty awful. So just keep that in mind. The Philips ones do, so you won't have a problem, and a lot of the newer ones do. I'd be more tempted to get a set of wireless headphones that actually has the dedicated transmitter, to be honest, unless you really want to double up the use with your mobile phone.
I kind of did, and this one had an adapter so that you could plug it in, use it in like airport mode, and actually plug it into something without it being Bluetoothed.
Yeah, they're not too bad. We've actually got a Bluetooth headset that it actually comes with a little AA battery thing that actually is the transmitter, and then you plug the... I think they're a creative set of Bluetooth headphones, and they actually work really well. One end plugs into the sound card of your computer, and you put a battery in it, and you sort of turn the transmitter on, and then you pair the Bluetooth headset up with it, and you can wander around about 5 or 10 metres away from the computer. So they tend to work fairly well. But yeah, just make sure that the... Yeah, they're not bad. The Plantronic stuff is quite good. Just be aware that your stack has to support the Bluetooth audio profile. You have to have your Bluetooth stack correctly configured. You need a decent Bluetooth dongle, and you need to set the whole thing up to behave itself all quite nicely, and then it all should go fairly well. Also, however, do note that Bluetooth and 802.11 wireless networking do interfere with each other. And if you have too much wireless networking or too much Bluetooth, you will impact the other. So be warned.
Well, with this computer, I'm kind of hardwired in, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. No, that's all right. But yeah, I mean, as I said, once you get it all working, we just found that it was a fairly finicky sort of stack and that to get up and running. Once it did work quite well. So, yeah. YMMV. All right, everyone. See you all next week.
Yeah, see you all, well, not next week, well, we will see you next week, but you'll see Terry, yeah, next week. I'm thinking it's Wednesday. We'll see you next week, and I'll go back to sleep.
See you guys next week.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
You too, so, see you later.
You too, Grace.
See ya.
See you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Geraldine.
Have a good week.